The coronavirus crisis is a potential preview of our response to extreme climate change. But heaven help us if we have to deal with both at the same time. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech, Demystifying the Digital Economy. I'm Molly Wood. The coronavirus crisis is, of course, all-consuming right now. But for those who spend their careers working on climate change, it is both a preview of what responding to extreme climate change might look like, a worrying distraction from a global problem that's still happening, and potentially a path to some changed habits that could actually help us fight warming in the long run. Jay Coe is managing director of the private equity firm Lightsmith Group, which invests in climate tech. He says, yeah, investment is down, but that's not the only concern.
We see a couple other effects too. So one of them is what we are really worried about and are calling kind of the double whammy effect, which is nothing stops the impact from climate change from happening right now or over the course of the next 3 to 6 months. You have an increasingly fragile environment that's been created by the pandemic and the knock-on effects we're going to see from the economic adjustments. That still makes it even more vulnerable to the impact of climate, which has certainly not gone away. Right. But you're right. I think what we've done is sort of steadily load the dice against ourselves. And each time that they don't turn up the wrong way for us, we feel like, well, you know, it's pretty much the same as usual. But when they do actually manifest, we have to have this sudden reaction. And it's dramatically more expensive and problematic, particularly for the most vulnerable populations at the time that we actually realize the impact of it.
Right. What does happen to the fight against climate change when the whole world goes on pause because of coronavirus?
Well, I think there's two possible effects. On the one hand, how much more intervention do you have? So it's kind of amazing that you can mobilize $2 trillion of activity in the United States in the space of less than 3 months. Mm-hmm. The flip side to that is lots of people's budgets for doing anything else have now vanished. So let's say you do get a double whammy situation, or you try to prepare against the loaded dice on the climate side as well. How much money is left in the kitty to do that is a really interesting question, in addition to the attention span piece of it and the fact that it's hard to do very much more than react to the immediate set of circumstances we have right now. And they're very, very serious.
Right. You say interesting, but I hear challenging at best. Like, it's an interesting question, but it sounds a little like a scary question.
Well, the question is also, what do you do with that $2 trillion? You could reorient it so that you try to have the reverse of the double whammy effect, right? Where you actually take the spending and the massive amount of stimulus and the massive amount of mobilization and orient it at, you know, making sure that we do accelerate the transition on the carbon side to try to reduce the trajectory that we're on the climate change cause side of the equation, and also do it in a way that actually builds up our resilience to the potential impact and risk that we're going to see from climate change at the same time.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about what's happening right now. I wonder, you know, as so many of us are working from home, conferences are canceled. Are there habits that we might end up adopting permanently or discoveries, you know, that could actually be good for at least, I don't know, in the short term, mitigating carbon emissions?
I think that you are seeing that effect right now. There's been a lot of commentary about how there's reduced airborne pollution. You're seeing definitely reductions in air traffic, which has a very high carbon budget to it. So I think that there is a real chance that we can think about what do we really need to do to change the way that we actually consume energy, need to travel, need to meet people. I think some of those habits really can transition. Some of them have already transitioned for the younger generation. Our 11 and 9-year-old and 4-year-old are all very naturally engaged in video conferencing right now, I'd say. But it also is something that also creates a very stark understanding of how the digital divide also impacts people as well. So we were talking to some counterparties in Kenya, and they said, look, working from home for them means no internet access. So It's great that you guys can jump on Zoom and travel around, and then virtually visit people and connect. There's going to be a dramatic difference in the way that the poor population has that experience, as well as developing countries have that experience as well.
Yeah. I wonder, what will this do for data collection? Like, if we have 6 months or a year where human carbon emissions, you know, dramatically decrease, where the transportation that we have just assumed could not change, like, this is just how life is. Everybody flies this much and drives this much, is forced to change in a way we never would have imagined. Like, what kind of data could we take away from that that could, frankly, you know, demolish some excuses?
Well, I think you can really show people how their consumer preferences can permanently change, right? And I think you're right that your individual carbon footprint can change in a more permanent way. And so the need to do all these things, the pace at which you were doing them, and the ultimate result, I think, is going to be recalculated. Now, whether that is true of a lot of different things, I think the challenges that people are facing right now is if you're trying to close transactions or make new relationships happen for the first time, the human element is very much missing from that equation. I don't know if a lot of investors are going to invest in companies that they've never met the management team personally, at least in private investing, or a lot of transactions can close without folks meeting face-to-face in a real environment, though that I think can culturally change as well.
Jay Ko is managing director of the private equity firm Lightsmith Group. Connecting climate and coronavirus more directly, preliminary research shows that counties in the U.S. with more pollution may be seeing more deaths from the virus than cleaner areas. And now for some related links. First, a little more on what this data around pollution might mean. The New York Times has a piece that connects that story with reports that show Black Americans are getting and dying from COVID-19 more than other races. The EPA and other research bodies have found over and over that communities of color are more likely to live in polluted areas, closer to coal plants, refineries, and industrial manufacturing sites. And exposure to that pollution can increase the underlying health conditions, the comorbidities, that make COVID-19 more likely to be fatal. The pollution data about coronavirus, as we said, is still preliminary. But if true, it's yet another example of how natural disasters like viruses and storms and global climate change disproportionately impact vulnerable communities. And there's nothing natural about how they got that way. On the topic of pollution, we've been hearing a lot about visibly and measurably cleaner air as global pollution and even global carbon emissions are falling because people all over the world are in lockdown to avoid spreading the virus. Another Times article points out that our recovery efforts from the coronavirus have the potential to have a huge impact on climate change and emissions if we take this as an opportunity to change not only our transportation habits, but the way and the amount in which we consume and create goods. Because industrial manufacturing, even more than driving and flying, is the source of most of the world's carbon emissions. Or we could go the other way and reduce pollution oversight, encourage everyone to buy SUVs with all that cheap gas, and set aside global emissions treaties to deal with the short-term crisis in front of us. Option two is already starting to play out in the U.S. and other countries. But let's not give up on option one, okay? I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.